The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcoming you, dear listeners, to this Friday edition of the Early Morning Scoop. And yes, it's not David that you're hearing. It's actually yours truly, Dwight. Don't worry, guys. Don't worry. It's just in a caretaker position up until next week, Wednesday, for that matter. But obviously, we've got a whole bunch of interesting discussions lined up for you guys on these early morning sessions, specifically in the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And as I always customarily do, welcoming you, hoping that you've got a cup of coffee in your hand. I technically only have a little bit of a water bottle in close proximity, but that's it. You know what? We run on different energy sources, and thus we look a little bit like, new age kind of nuclear reactors that don't need external, burning fuel to keep going. If you've just woken up, obviously, and you find yourself in terms of any other part of the country except for Windhoek, in Windhoek, obviously, we would have known that we had some lovely rain-ish. I say rain-ish because it didn't know if it wanted to be here or not, but it did do something nice. We appreciate it for it. And primarily wherever you find yourself across the country, I know that in Kitmansoop they were slightly hit with some heavy wind associated with the rainfall there. Kudos to you guys. Obviously, let's just be sure that the particular, impact that happened in Arnos does not technically also transpire or transmit itself to other parts of the country. Getting in earnest, specifically as we always do here on the early morning session on your number one talk radio station, what we always do as always is, you've seen the poster where we've lined up an interesting particular discussion based upon cryptocurrencies, or as I was told in the discussion, keep it at virtual assets. Don't do the cryptocurrency discussion. But yes, we'll be speaking to Mr. Nikolai Chongorero a little bit later in the particular show. You can look forward to that particular engagement. And as we always do, we start off with the international segment leading up right now. And then we take a look at a recent engagement where if you can call it the science and academia field specifically, came together here in Namibia, as well as also looking towards the solutions that they can find for the future under the particular overall climate change threat that specifically Southern Africa faces. But before we get into that notion, we step into the international news segment. Now, first off, as always, various particular developments have happened, and starting off on an American basis specifically, this is as the US President Donald Trump has instructed the US Pentagon to resume testing of US nuclear weapons. Now, he has said that his country, the United States, will restart its nuclear weapons testing program after a break of more than 30 years. This is as Trump has said that the tests are necessary to keep pace with China and Russia. Let's have a listen to this.
He says the tests are necessary to keep pace with China and Russia. In a statement published online, Trump wrote, and I quote, "Because of other countries' testing programs, I have instructed the Department of War to start testing our nuclear weapons on an equal basis. That process will begin immediately." Trump also spoke about it later on Air Force One.
Others, they seem to all be nuclear testing. We have more nuclear weapons than anybody. We don't do testing. We've halted it many years ago. But with others doing testing, I think it's appropriate that we do also.
Let's unpack this with William Elberg. He's a senior adjunct fellow at the Pacific Forum, and he previously served as director of NATO's Arms Control, Disarmament, and Non-Proliferation Center. Good to be talking to you again, William. Just hearing what Donald Trump said there, it sounds as if the U.S. should carry out testing because other countries are carrying out testing. Is that the only reason?
Well, in terms of technological information from nuclear testing, there's just not much that the United States would get right now out of that. The United States did a number of tests, hundreds of them, across the Cold War, recorded that information. In the meantime, we've developed new supercomputers that can gather tremendous amounts of information without nuclear testing. So I think this really is a political gesture rather than a technological gesture.
Right. I mean, it's interesting you say that because I think the U.S. has conducted something like more than 1,000 tests. I think the last nuclear explosion, full-scale nuclear explosion, was in 1992. It seems to have conducted so-called subcritical tests after that. Is that correct?
Right.
And if so, what is the difference between a subcritical test and a full-on nuclear explosion?
Right. A nuclear explosion is defined by the criticality, by the fact that you have fission of uranium or plutonium. And so a subcritical test means testing that you do that does not cause any sort of criticality whatsoever. There's no nuclear yield. There's no explosion. And under the CTBT, under the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, countries are allowed to do all sorts of technological work and testing and things like that, as long as it does not result in a nuclear explosion. And so this subcritical testing that the United States and China and Russia have been conducting in the UK and France, since the CTBT was signed by these countries. But importantly, the CTBT has not entered into force. And so while countries are abiding by this, and there has been no testing other than India, Pakistan, and North Korea, who are not members of the treaty, we still see experiments that are occurring without nuclear explosions in the United States.
While making this announcement about resuming nuclear testing, Donald Trump also said that he would like to see denuclearization. I mean, isn't that a conflicting statement there?
I think what Trump is trying to do is he's trying to mirror what he thinks these other countries are doing. So the United States intelligence...
We're going to take a short break, dear listeners, and come back right after this.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We come back where we left off with the previous report just before the ad break.
Folks, some of them have believed that Russia and China have been doing things that are more than subcritical tests, that they've been doing something with very small yields, but actual explosions that have been hidden at their test facilities. And so it could be that Trump is wanting to match them in order to get them into arms control talks. He thinks he has to match his adversary. He doesn't think he can go into a negotiation without leverage. So he may be seeking leverage to force Russia and China into deeper nuclear negotiations.
But is that how they're going to be responding, you think? More tests, or there's going to be more negotiations?
It's really interesting because on the 2nd of October, President Putin said that he thought that someone was preparing nuclear tests. So it may be that we're in a classic trap where both sides are thinking each other are doing things, and so they're advancing based on their estimates of what the other sides are doing, when really they have to have an honest conversation about that. And I think Trump himself has been very stung recently in his talks with Putin, who keeps doing the bait and switch on Ukraine. promising peace and then doing the opposite. So we may be in a point where they're just talking past each other, and they really need to talk very specifically about nuclear testing, about the future of nuclear weapons, and we'll see if President Xi can join in those talks too. Remember, all this comes mm-hmm. as President Trump is walking into a meeting with President Xi Jinping in Busan.
One of the legacies of the Cold War, of course, William, were the number of these treaties that prevented the proliferation of nuclear weapons, particularly between, say, Russia and the United States. Am I correct in saying that there is only one treaty now that exists between Russia and the United States, and that too that expires next year?
That's correct. The New START Treaty between the U.S. and Russia is going to end in February. There's no provision within the treaty to extend it, so the two sides would need to agree on something separately. Mm-hmm. President Putin has suggested that maybe they can extend the limits of the treaty one more year, but the two sides really need to talk, because that would mean we would be the first time since 1972 where we don't have a bilateral limit between the U.S. and the Russians on their nuclear arsenals.
Now, coming back from that specifically, we step literally into that particular engagement that also took place between the United States and China literally yesterday or a few hours back. And this is specifically as the U.S.-China trade talks actually commenced with what seems to be visuals of the two leaders actually shaking hands. Now, this is as U.S. President Donald Trump and China's Xi Jinping have reached an agreement which is expected to ease the tensions over the U.S.-China trade war that has taken place. Let's have a listen to this report.
The leaders met for much anticipated talks in South Korea. Now, while there was no major breakthrough at the meeting, President Trump says he agreed to reduce tariffs in exchange for concessions from Beijing on a range of issues, including rare earth exports and agricultural imports.
It was a chance to iron out the kinks.
Great pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you again.
After months of a tit-for-tat trade war, U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping sat down in South Korea with demands on the table. For the U.S., that was access to rare earth minerals. China wanted reduced tariffs and a pathway to American-made chips. Both got what they wanted.
I thought it was a great meeting. I think it was a very friendly meeting. It was a good meeting for two very large, powerful countries, and that's the way we should get along with them.
The U.S. has agreed to shave China's overall tariff rate by 10% to 47% in response to stricter Chinese measures to stop the flow of fentanyl to the U.S. In turn, China will pause export controls on rare earth minerals, crucial to the production of cars, planes, smartphones, and weapons.
That whole situation, that roadblock is gone now. There's no roadblock at all on rare earth. That will hopefully disappear from our vocabulary for a little while.
While the one-year agreement is a step in the right direction, a more comprehensive trade deal is yet to be struck. Trump said the deal would be signed, quote, pretty soon, while Xi Jinping said the countries should finalize the next steps as soon as possible.
The two agreed to maintain regular communication. President Trump looks forward to visiting China next year and invited President Xi Jinping to the U.S.
Two global powers calling a trade truce for now.
We're going to talk about this with Klaus Sung, an analyst at the Mercator Institute for China Studies, who specializes in China's global strategy. Welcome, Klaus. Great to have you here in the studio. President Trump sounding really enthusiastic about his meeting with President Xi. He's talking about an agreement on lower tariffs and about China withdrawing export restrictions on rare earths. Can we say, though, that this is really a trade deal?
I think we're in a pause from the both sides about their tension in trade, specifically when we see when President Trump get into office in earlier this year. We see after Liberation Day, we see the tariff keep going on, and both sides is adding up from each side, from Beijing side and from the Washington side. So we might see a pause here, but it's not completely, it's not a complete deal. We are seeing that it's on a year review basis. We are seeing that they have a pause and they will continue to talk about that in the coming years and to see like whether they really abiding with Lee's and whether we'll see President Trump or the Chinese side had different things to come up with. So they pause on like the harbor fees. They pause on the rare earth export, stop buying the soybean. But is it really a deal? I think we don't see that much from the Chinese side yet.
Let's talk about what China is saying. It's promising to control the export of the ingredients that make the drug fentanyl. Mm-hmm. It would lift restrictions on exporting rare earths. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it says it's going to buy more soybeans from the US. If it does all of this, what would China get in return?
I think what China get in return is a reduce of the tariff to, I think, from the 57% to 47% from today, as we just hear from most media reports. But I think China need that. China need to sustain its economy and to maintain a proper external environment to reduce the tension with US. So its economy would not get harder and harder. And I think that is important for China to get in return, to stabilize the relationship, not just economic, but also the overall relationship between US and China in that sense.
So this is a win for China. President Trump likes being the winner, doesn't he? We hear that a lot. So who made more concessions in the end? Who is the winner here?
I think we don't see a clear winner yet on the trade deal per se, or the trade terms per se, not even a deal. But we are seeing that Trump and Xi, well, at least from the Chinese side, they get in a more equal position with the American, right? So in the Beijing's perspective, Beijing has the power or capability that to sit on the same table. And we're seeing that is Trump chasing Xi. We don't see that coming up that much from the Chinese side talking about their meeting, right? Chinese announced or confirmed the meeting very lately in a sense, rather than we seeing that unlike Trump keeps saying their meeting, they might be meeting, might be not, right? We're seeing that China commit in a very firm position or, a firm position that we are seeing. Of course, American having a very strong demand, as we see in Kuala Lumpur's meeting from between the two sides of negotiator. But we are seeing that China take a very stern position and are able to refute compared to other countries which get into Trump very quickly in the past couple months. China still not yet giving in to Trump's requests on tariff.
So China's in a stronger position. Would you say then that the tariff war between the US and China is over?
I wouldn't say it's completely over, but it's in a pause, right? We are seeing that they are both keeping leverage to each other. They can still applying that. Both China and US need each other in a certain degree, and they are essential to each other. No matter if it's rare earth from China or chips from US, both sides want stability, but both sides don't want to give in too much. There are still structural issues here between US and China in their competition. We're seeing a pause, but it's not the end of the competition.
Klaus Sung, analyst at the MacArthur Institute for China Studies. Klaus, thank you so much for your analysis.
Now, we step in our final particular report. We take a look specifically at the developments that have come out of Tanzania, specifically with the recent elections that are technically ongoing in Tanzania specifically. Now, take note, dear listeners, that obviously this has seen certain particular social media viral videos pop up, specifically about the recent event of just yesterday, where a horde of what you would call demonstrators actually stormed the Tanzanian International Airport in the capital, Dar es Salaam itself. Now, this led to police in the southern African country of Tanzania, its commercial capital, Dar es Salaam, firing gunshots and deploying tear gas on Thursday to disperse the protesters. Now, this is the second consecutive day of the demonstrations, which followed the recent elections in which President Samia Suluhu Hassan is seeking a second term. Now, the elections have been overshadowed by the exclusion of two major opposition parties. This also raises questions about the particular democracy's democratic processes' legitimacy in the country. Let's have a listen to this.
Bala Njuganda, he is SABC News correspondent, bringing us the latest on these protests. Michael, it's a pleasure. Welcome. So what can you tell us about the current situation in Tanzania? We hear that police have had to use excessive force to try and disperse a crowd of protesters.
Hello there. Well, the situation right now in Dar es Salaam, especially Dar es Salaam, is calm. We understand much of the day, much of the city was abandoned. The shops were closed because police had told all the probably government workers to stay home. They had ordered all the schools to remain closed and the children to stay home. But, of course, in some parts of the city, in the morning, we realized, of course, riots broke out and police was forced because the crowds were racing into the city. And they wanted to set some government buildings alight, and police was forced to fire tear gas and also probably use live ammunition. And we know some people have died. We cannot really, these are unconfirmed reports. We know some people have died, and we know other people were injured. But much of the city has remained calm and closed, and there have been roadblocks in many parts of the city, especially the explosive suburbs where the riots started yesterday. As you realize, the riots started on Wednesday after the polls opened, and of course, we saw many polling stations were set alight by protesters who were angry about because of the exclusion of the main political parties that were supposed to be involved in this election.
Maybe, Michael, talk to us broadly about that. I mean, what led to the exclusion of these two major opposition party leaders? And talk to us about what has been the general reaction by those specifically in support of those that have been excluded during this campaign.
Well, to tell you the truth, that when President Samia Suluhu Hassan came into government after the death of President Magufuli, she came in with an idea of reconciliation, resilience, rebuilding, and this attracted investors. It was
save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get 4 kg Cadilla mixed chicken for $189.99, 1 kg Pasta Grande spaghetti for $19.99, 750 gram Nola mayo for just $37.99, and 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $52.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAID? 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body lotion or cream, just $29.99. 350 milliliter trusted palm olive shampoo and conditioner, just $38.99 each. Lovey's premium disposable nappies, $133.99. Any 2 1-kilogram bags Sunlight 5-in-1 hand washing powder, just $58. Save $2. You save, I save, we all save at USAID.
Come back from the quick break right there and continue where we left off with the report.
Back donors into Tanzania. We saw overwhelming response in terms of developments that were starting to happen. But as time went on, she took a critical stance towards the opposition. And we saw, for example, the Chadema, the main opposition party led by Tundu Lissu, it refused to stand unless there were political reforms. But then Tundu Lissu was jailed and sent to prison. Later on, the other major political party leader, the Wazalendo party, which was headed by Luhaga Mpina, was also dropped down and from the list of those that were standing. And the parties, most of the parties that remained, were in no contest with President Samia Suluhu Hassan. And actually, most of the critics have said that yesterday's poll, the Wednesday poll, was more of a coronation of President Samia Suluhu Hassan. And we have seen this from the polling centers, that the results that have been coming out, where she's over 90% margin past the people she contested with. This angered many Tanzanians, and this angered the masses, and they felt like, you know, they need to act. And the opposition called for these protests, and they said, we would not stand with this sham election. So that is what sparked, and we saw, of course, the riots come in. This caused the curfew. The police was forced to bring in a curfew yesterday, last night, and today. But of course, this curfew was broken this morning when many of the protesters came into town. We have also had the airports were closed and some international flights cancelled to Dar es Salaam and the Kilimanjaro airport in Arusha, Tanzania, in Arusha. So, I mean, this is what really sparked people, but many of the people have remained home, and the worst bit is that little information is coming out because of internet was shut down. So the communication, there was not much communication going on. We have had some networks have been restored, but it is slow. It's on and off. And what we know is what is happening is just a state broadcaster that is transmitting the results as we speak, but they're not speaking about what is happening in the rest of the suburbs.
I can only imagine, Michael, but to talk to us about whether or not you are aware of any diplomatic efforts to try and bring about a quick resolution to, of course, these violent protests.
Well, at this point, we had the observers, were supposed the observers of the elections, that was African Union and some international observers, wanted to give a statement yesterday after the polls had closed, but this was not possible because the internet was shut down. We have not had anything come, apart from the human rights groups that have come up, speaking about the use of excessive force and telling the government to tone down and you know, de-escalate. But we have not, little information is coming out because there is no communication. There is no, the internet is not yet back on, and they have, it's one way that has been, one tool that has been used to kind of shut down the people and shut them up. The only live kind of broadcast that is available is the Tanzania Broadcasting Corporation, which is currently broadcasting the provisional results by the Independent Electoral Commission. But we have not heard from the observers. We have not heard from what we have heard from the statements that have come in from rights groups, for example, in Kenya, rights groups, Amnesty International, telling the government of Tanzania to de-escalate. At this point, that's what we know.
And then, Michael, maybe a quick one in closing as well. I mean, we understand at this stage, maybe confirm this to us. Has there been an official election result, or you've just spoken about provisional, of course, votes that have been counted so far. Talk to us about how the vote counting is actually ongoing at this stage and when we should, in fact, expect the final official election results, of course, if it comes to that point.
As we speak right now, the Tanzania Broadcasting Corporation, of course using the Independent Electoral Commission, are releasing by piecemeal these provisional results, mostly coming in from polling centers across the country. We know the polling centers were more than 200, about 222 to be precise. And what we know, that's on the mainland, Tanzania mainland, and what we know is less than 30 provisional results have from polling centers have actually been read out. So which means there's a long way to go. But what we know is Zanzibar, which started its polls on Tuesday, They are about to finish their provisional results, they're still tallying, but at least that is on the, we're likely to know tomorrow, that will be Friday, what may be coming out of Zanzibar. But for the rest of Tanzania, like I said, yesterday when the protests started, the first target were the polling centers. Most of them were satellite. Voting materials and equipment was destroyed. We don't know what that is going, what is going to come out from that, because the Independent Electoral Commission has not spoken or said anything about those polling centers that were destroyed. But what we know right now is that the few out of the 200, about 30, have been released from 30 polling stations. We still have probably about more than 190 to go, which means they will still have to go tonight and probably through Friday. The earliest we believe could be Saturday if to hear any clear announcement of the results that may come out. But what you also need to know is that what we've had of those 30 polling stations, President Samia Suluhu Hassan, who is of the ruling party CCM, is leading by over 90% margin with the other, compared to the other people she stood with.
And that brings us up to the end of the international news segment, specifically here on the Early Morning Scoop. We'll take a quick break, dear listeners. We step into the second half of which technically is the local news segment. And we come back right after this with the insightful discussions lined up for this morning's engagement. Stay tuned, and we'll be back right after this short break.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyzes issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Coming back there, dear listeners, from the quick break, the quick intermission. We're about 20 minutes out from the top of the hour. And just to cite to you specifically before we continue is that you can catch the latest edition specifically of the e-paper in your inbox if you are part of our subscription process. You can also access much of the up-to-date particular reports and discussions. Well, not now immediately on the Villager website itself, but you can always, if you wish to become, you know, and view and see much of the reports and analyses that we've cited for you in the e-paper itself is also found on the Villager's website itself. Just remember, it's the Villager, thevillager.com.na, but primarily also the, if you want to be part of the early bird, you know, the early bird rush or the early bird in terms of receiving your daily or your every Monday, Wednesday and Friday diet of reading material coming through from the e-paper itself. Just remember that you can be part of this process by just dropping us a text message that says subscribe. Remember to well, it's not a text message, it's on the SMS platform, but more on WhatsApp, please. That literally says subscribe. The number that you should send to is 081-200-4144, and that allows you to be able to become a subscriber. Just indicate in which particular format you'd like to subscribe. There's obviously through the specific Eagle FM channel. Not the Eagle FM, but the Villager channel. There's also the Eagle FM WhatsApp channel as well. You can also follow those two particular channels in terms of getting also quicker updates through to your handheld device. And then there's obviously still our social medias that you can also scroll through and have a look at the various particular talking points we always provide. Now, getting back from that mouthful, I know. To cite specifically some of the particular important takes that have coming through from this morning's The Villager, we'll slightly just skim over some of the headlines so you can just have an understanding in terms of what's encapsulated in today's edition. Obviously, a little bit later, we'll just cite and cherry-pick one of the two particular reports citing the very interesting discussions happening. The most important one, which is our lead for this morning specifically, is the potential prosecution of financial crimes in order for Namibia to literally be degraded, to be removed from the Financial Action Task Force's grey list. And this obviously means that there is a big development in terms of lawmaking on the table. If you have not read this morning's particular, a very significant report on this particular avenue as yet, well, and you've not subscribed with us as yet, I still don't know where you have been if you have not. But if you have not checked it out, but you are a subscriber, do have a look there, see what it encapsulates. I hope you might not be one of the particular, if we can call them, sinners, proverbial sinners in this particular dimension, because this technically could speak towards a varying degree of, some developments, core developments that would lead to financial crimes actually becoming a more prominent particular prosecuting element in the Namibian society. We also have some other particular interesting reads that pop up specifically with the Chinese embassy to Namibia, specifically citing the solidarity with regards to Africa and Latin America's call for reparations. If you have not remembered that specifically, 2025 had been deemed by the AU as the theme for seeking reparations in terms of seeking justice. Now, this primarily works on the notion, obviously, of Africa's particular history and the particular history that has been suffered by the various African countries, each one obviously, you know, representing various particular social needs there that stem from many particular inequalities and the likes. This obviously also gives a particular difference or a different core in terms of how other countries who are traditional partners of the African continent and as well as also of Namibia, how they view this particular call in terms of the global balance, if you would like to call that, of the international landscape in terms of who has still in many parts the particular international, or if you wish to call it, multilateral leverages, and who does not have these particular leverages. And this is obviously stating from the developments that I have also recently noted in our home run sessions, dear listeners, is that you get, specifically if you've got a look at the bargaining position that a continent like Africa occupies, it is a position based from three particular significantly very, very affordable components: cheap labor, cheap land, and cheap resources. Keep it like that. Cheap labor, cheap land, and cheap resources. And these particular developments in their own right obviously have sprung open various developments across the continent, and you have seen a plethora of developments coming about. Another particular key article also to cite and to look at has been the talking point that stems from the aspect of cheaper credit to stimulate the Namibian property sector. A credit facility, just as you would know, guys, is obviously loan facilities or lending facilities. These obviously being mechanisms that would or that are used currently in the particular national framework of the national property market in Namibia to finance new homes, the construction of new homes, and developments of a similar residential nature. What is still pivotal, and I'll keep this a little bit later in the program when we come back to the e-paper's particular main talking points that stem from this morning's engagement, is primarily you've also got to look at statistics. Data, data, data is gold. Data sets the particular scene, and data allows us to be able to chart a conducive, informed approach to particular economic issues. If you don't know and the information is not readily available, then how would you know how to plan? How would you know how to intervene? And how would you know what particular mechanisms to position close to the market that would necessarily need it? I mentioned that particular thing because you have a specific function in the United States that recently came under scrutiny earlier this year. Primarily, it was known as the Affordable Housing Program in the US, and it draw major backlash from the African American population or the demographics of the United States, primarily because they realized that there were so many Americans that abuse this particular system. What the system does, dear listeners, and it's just a little bit of a, you know, dropping a little bit of a piece of interesting information in this discussion. America literally has a particular interventionist program. It's a type of conditional grant, but it allows for paying for affordable home care, not giving you a loan to buy a property. It pays part of your rent to a property. Now, this has been proven specifically in this past year that there are families and that there are individuals in the United States primarily who do not want to get off this program because it literally makes them comfortable in some aspects to not seek more or better living standards or to seek better employment standards or to earn more money, thus to move off of the program and thus give an opportunity to other needy people who obviously are also coming in at the other end, you know, at the lower end of society to try and find their feet as well. It was many cases promoted squarely only to single mothers with children or single parents who needed a assistance from the government, and this particular assistance was based upon a notion of, okay, why don't you find affordable housing, which could be a flat, which could be a rental agreement, just ensure you pay the 50% of that agreement, and the state, the government in the United States will look after the other part of that. A wonderful idea on paper. You would also think that way. You would also go like, wow, look at the United States in their own right. This has been a program that has been in existence for more than 20 years in the United States, but it has been excessively abused. And the particular numbers, obviously, that, you know, Donald Trump brought out earlier this year were shocking things. And in many cases, you literally have families who refuse to move off of this particular program, who refuse to work more, refuse to earn more money, refuse to uplift themselves and move on to something better and find their own particular feet from this particular position of assistance that they have been enjoying for a very long time, ending up abusing it. Now, finishing up on that particular note in terms of just, you know, supplementing a few particular talking points in there, we start in earnest in or with the particular discussions coming through in this morning's early morning scoop, and specifically turning to one of the talking points, which in summarized format for now, comes about from various developments that have kicked off in the country or across the country. Now, Namibia recently welcomed academics and researchers from various Southern African universities to explore the various methods of addressing issues that stem from climate change effects in the region. Now, speaking at the particular event, Prime Minister Elijah Ngurare indicated that the Conference on Climate Change and Futures in Africa should be a platform that explores solutions that are found in the various regional communities and the indigenous knowledge hubs that would be aimed at mitigating the extreme climatic conditions when they actually occur. We take a listen to what the Prime Minister said in that particular notion.
The way we collaborate, research, plan, and act for a safer, more sustainable future. Therefore, I applaud NCRST and HSRC for jointly organizing this international research conference, bringing the world to Namibia and by extension to Africa. Climate change is no longer a theoretical or distant phenomenon. It is everyday reality, shaping livelihoods, economic systems, and security. Across Africa, you agree, the intensity we constantly witness the reports of climate change. And I think it is not only in Namibia, the same in South Africa, at least some parts of South Africa. I think it's in the Durban and other parts that are flooding from time to time. Extreme weather events have increased, threatening food security, public health, and infrastructure. This gathering therefore provides an essential platform for all stakeholders, that is us in government, academia, industry, researchers, innovators, and communities, to deliberate and develop strategies aimed at reducing the impact of disasters on our people, on the environment, and infrastructures. Of course, as the governments are responsible for disaster, for us in the Office of the Prime Minister,
now, the Prime Minister also cited specifically that the geography and the natural environment is constantly under threat from the various anomalies that affect the human and animal lives that operate on the surface of the planet. Now, he also noted that disaster risk management has been a method of mitigation that the country has actually relied on in past instances. Let's take a listen to what he also added on this note.
Yeah, And then, of course, the surface hydrology of it, and less climate-proof roads infrastructure, resulting in disproportionately.
Now, also speaking at the same particular engagement, just after the Prime Minister himself, was the Deputy Executive Director from MESAC, Lisha Mundia, who outlined that Southern Africa is in a precarious position due to its unpredictable future and the impacts that it is experiencing. Now, these developments have meant that disaster risk management plays an integral part in the maintenance of the current situation of the environment being habitable for future generations. Let's have a listen to what he asked.
And when we meet here today, we do so at a moment when the reality of climate variability and disasters are increasing. Increasing across our countries and of course the continent. The right now, of course, as we speak, at least one out of the five Namibians is expecting high level of acute flood insecurity. And of course that is a whipping 600,000 Namibians. Most of those affected are, of course, the youth and marginalized communities living in the rural areas, with, of course, limited resources. And we know that our population of 60% of that are rural-based, which is not a bad thing. We just say, let's manage the situation and make the environment conducive for them through research. Informed message. So disasters vary in space and of course in time. Because they can occur locally, they can occur globally, and they happen in a moment, or of course they can develop over a period of years. It is well known that major floods in Namibia frequently originate from heavy rainfall in neighboring countries, particularly those of Angola. You would agree with me, ladies and gentlemen, that the northern and northeastern part of Namibia are mostly affected. And they are downstreams of major rivers that cross international waters. These are complex interactions. And I think the Prime Minister put it well, that it doesn't require borders. As a geographer myself, what we have been doing, we have always been warning people, so don't wait for rain to prepare for relocation or mitigation. Because if Angola hopes, you get the hope. Yeah. And it has happened. If you look at the flood that's okay in our northern part, northern eastern part, the Kabambo River, it's not the rainfall. We receive maximum, not any more 700 millimeters of.
We're going to take a short break, the last one.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben ganz neue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat oder spare noch mehr mit unseren speziellen Abonnementplänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. That's why we're committed to bringing you lower prices on all the essentials you need. Like 6x1 liter Rite brand long life full cream milk for only 119 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And 4 kg real good frozen chicken, mixed portions, only 194 Namibian dollars 99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 9 November 2025. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready, Steady, Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia.
Coming back there from the ad break itself, and that has brought us to the midway point of this morning's early morning scoop. We step into an very interesting particular engagement between myself and one of Namibia's local Well, if you can call him actually one of Namibia's actually foremost particular participants in the realm and thinkers of the virtual assets discussion, specifically around the developments that have also transpired in the past October month, because October is technically ending today, as well as also taking a look at some of the talking points that stem from the developments that have happened from 2 weeks back up until this week primarily, with much of the developments also stemming from the what would have been called a major particular upheaval in the financial markets of the international or global virtual assets discussion. When you cite the particular developments that obviously have taken place, is that on 10 October, nearly $20 billion had vanished. You can say it was probably someone had sold high, had taken a opportune moment in terms of trying to, get as much money as possible out of the particular discussion in terms of international trading of these cryptocurrencies and various particular virtual assets, which also includes the NFTs as well. Because virtual assets is now sort of like the umbrella term that is being applied now to a cryptocurrency, to an NFT, and all other particular digital non-regulated items, because the regulation, you still have to find the regulation specifically from an act or law. But this particular indication was that people didn't actually know who was actually behind this. People did not actually know who were some of the major contributors in this particular discussion and what their particular sort of like ambition was specifically to look at these virtual assets. Now, when you hear the particular discussion that is now going to follow on right after this short introduction, just to give you the particular gist, is that back in last week specifically, US President Donald Trump had decided to lob another grenade across the Pacific. And this was a particular discussion based upon what this all actually started from. And it was based upon a Truth Social post whereby US President Donald Trump indicated that China or Chinese imports into the United States could face 100% tariff increase on this. This created a lot of turmoil in the particular virtual assets sector, financial sectors itself, and it created a lot of insecurity. And said particular developments is actually the basis for this morning's engagement with Nicolai Chongorero from Easy Sats. And Nicolai helps us understand as well as also some of the particular developments in terms of whether or not politics is actually that powerful that it can influence various particular negative financial developments from occurring. Let's have a listen to what he added. And welcoming you this morning, dear listeners, once again to an interesting early morning scoop, particular in-depth discussion as we are doing here on Eagle FM. We turn this morning specifically to an in-depth discussion based upon the world of cryptocurrencies, crypto technology, as well as also various developments that are popping up. Not noticeably in Namibia, but there are movers and shakers in Namibia in their own rights doing this. And for this morning session, we actually welcome one of them, that being Nicolai Chongorero from Oaken, or from Easy Sats. Or is it Nicolai, actually, that Oaken is your other persona, should I say?
Yeah, we could call it a persona.
But thank you once again for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad to be here and honored to be here. Thank you.
Nicolai, when we start off with, this is actually just one particular dimension I want us to start from that flows into the actual focus that we plan for, mm-hmm. is if we look at a recent particular exploratory research paper that the World Gold Council came out with to say, hey, listen, let's try and digitize gold in the crypto sphere of things. But it was purely just an idea. Mm-hmm. And they're giving their bare minimum motivations for it. But when you look at the discussion of digitizing an actual asset or an actual resource or a mineral, what does that firstly speak of? And specifically, how plausible is such a particular idea?
Oh, that's an interesting end to that question as well. So firstly, I'd like people to, when we look at things like this, again, I enjoy the fact that you called it an exploratory paper, and the fact that nobody has been able to prove how viable this is yet. And I think in my own personal capacity, there's a reason for this in that, let's use an example. If we tokenize gold, okay, you have a certificate or you have a representation on a blockchain, whatever blockchain technology, Ethereum, whatever, not Bitcoin. Let's leave it that I'm, for now, let me not be my Bitcoin only self. Let's play devil's advocate.
Yeah, so the people at least know there's various variations.
I'm definitely Bitcoin only, but let's, as in the Namibian context, we call them virtual assets.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very good distinction from calling everything crypto.
Yeah.
And with these virtual assets, what you need to understand is if we're tokenizing something that's physical, it's no longer a bearer asset. The whole point of having something like Bitcoin is he who owns it controls it, right? Which means that if I own the Bitcoin in self-custody, there's no way for you to stop me from transferring it. There's no way for you to take it from me unless you actually have me and I give it up to you. It's a bearer asset.
Or the access codes. And
which,
and
again, I'd have to misplace or give to you.
Yeah.
Right?
I would have to hack like North Korea.
No, well, you can't hack Bitcoin. It's never, Bitcoin codes have never been hacked. This is the whole point.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Of having your 12 or 24 words backup phrase. But let's leave that aside for now. Let's talk about the tokenization of actual assets, physical assets. Now, if you own what is supposed to be a bearer asset on this physical token, and I take the token, as in as the state, I say, hey, we are taking everybody's gold within the, what is the ownership that you have?
Yeah, zero.
No, you still apparently have ownership of this token, but what is the token tied to? And now captured asset. So what is the point of what we are doing? Again, like, then just go buy a gold certificate. Yeah. What is, why would you want to try and put, there is a reason for this.
Yeah.
Whoever's going to release this golden token that everybody will buy into will make the money that they are buying into off, right? And then they can go and go buy another asset like Bitcoin or something else.
Exactly.
Or physical gold. But you, as the person holding that representation of ownership, don't own anything but that representation. Because the physical asset can still move. So this is why it's a hypothetical. Nobody knows how to make it that the same way you should have that digital ownership is the same way you should have the physical ownership. And those two aren't tied. And that is why something like Bitcoin was created as a completely digital asset that is a bearer asset that you can own and you control. And that's why it is a bearer asset.
Just highlight there for our listeners the bearer asset definition.
So the easiest way to understand it is if you own it, you must control its movement. AKA, if you want to send it, if you want to receive it, if you want to sell it, whatever, you do not need a third party to be able to do this, AKA cash. Cash is a bearer asset because as I hold it, it is mine.
Yeah.
It is not yours until you take it from me.
Yeah. Or I sell, give you something.
Or I give it to you for a product.
Yeah.
So in that, it moves as an asset that is owned and controlled by who owns and controls it. Now, you cannot have that as a representation of something that somebody else can control. So if you can control it and I have a representation of ownership, that's not a bearer asset. It can't be.
Because it technically looks like a duplication.
It's not even just a duplication. I own nothing.
Yeah.
You can control what I claim to own.
Mm.
That doesn't mean I own it.
Yeah. And the obvious thing is also, it has been highlighted how the real gold actually moves in the world.
Correct.
Because it sits in three particular spots. I don't want to give away any names, guys. But it sits in New York and it sits in Europe and there's a third place. And specifically, all the movements are technically from literally like a 5 meter radius. So they'll take from you as, let's say you are Russia and I am the US. If we are trading gold between each other and I'm buying gold from you, it just moves from the same room. 5, 10 meters.
We don't know that it moves. What we know is they say it moves and ownership changes.
Yeah.
And which is a lot of the way, that's why a lot of people call Bitcoin digital gold, because I don't actually send you Bitcoin. What happens is we change ownership of who owns the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Same as when I sell you a house, right? The house doesn't get up and move from me to you.
You give me some
ownership of who is
you
your
give
changes.
Me the key and you say, here's
that's
access.
It. Yeah. Ownership changes, not the asset actually moving.
Moves, yeah.
And this is also how a lot of the times gold moves is, you change ownership along, you know.
Well, on a ledger, they just tell you, okay.
It's not just a ledger. There's other things, but we could just for layman's terms say a ledger.
Yeah, it
but
moves one
does a gold really move? How many people know that they've actually gotten, cause you don't receive the physical gold, right? Yeah. You receive a certificate that says that
you are now,
unless you're an, you know, a refinery, or you work with them,
or the actual
then,
miner,
or the miner, yeah, then maybe you actually hold the gold.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think people should be very careful in their understanding of what an actual bearer asset, ownership, measured against control of that ownership means. When you look at things like us, and it's the same with, you know, Bitcoin ETFs and all these things that claim to be a representation of the underlying asset, while you could just buy the underlying asset.
And the obvious discussion, obviously, when we get to the crypto, well, like you said, the virtual asset is the title I actually have to use.
In Namibia, yes.
Yeah. It's okay, no, okay, yeah, okay, let's use it in Namibia. Now, when we have to look at, obviously, I mean, Nikolai, in essence, I don't know how I can keep track of all the particular supposed virtual asset, if they can call it like the market crashes or the market volatility. But when we look at that starting point that we highlighted of the digitization of a real mineral, real world mineral, and you look at it in terms of what is actively going on in the current sense of things. The volatility obviously would mean, what does a new user see in this? Does it mean that, okay, things don't look as sure cut, even though you and I might know, because that was usually the exchanges. It's not the actual, you know, where the virtual asset is meant. What can people see from the latest crash of 2 weeks back, whereby it was sparked by a political thing? Technically a Truth Social tweet, post by Trump, who said 100% tariffs. And then things went haywire, and now the accusation stands clear that supposedly one of Trump's sons did a rug pull. Is it a rug pull or is it a pump and dump that they called it?
That depends, but go on. We'll get to that.
Yeah. So that specific picture in its scenario was one of, obviously the exchanges, which are one of the biggest presences in the world, have a lot of clients, control a lot of money and cash flow, and a lot of the particular digital virtual assets that also have to flow through them for money conversion. The volatility is something that has exposed the virtual assets markets. What do we see in terms of any safety, any security, any surety? Okay, surety is the wrong word, but safety and security for people who wish to own virtual assets. And just tell us, in a Namibian context, between start of this year, because we announced at the start of this year, the Bank of Namibia, that supposedly three virtual asset operators got interim licenses. Are we still in Namibia able to send, receive, access, be able to convert virtual assets into hard cash for daily use?
Okay, those are all great questions. I'm going to have to break them up.
That's why I called them for a few.
So let's start at the beginning. When we look at what it is to own something, to own it, to have control over it, is to own it. To be able to say, I can switch this light on and off. That is ownership of the switch, right? Not necessarily ownership of the electricity that is supposed to come to your house. If you didn't pay your bill, you can still switch.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Electricity that is supposed to come to your house. If you didn't pay your bill, you can still switch that light, switch on and off. When there's no electricity. Right? So when we talk about ownership,
care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems.
Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will be about you.
And welcoming you, starting to see, hey, either there's value in this thing or there's movement in this thing. And the more money being pushed in, hey, it's climbing. Let me push in while it's on the climb before it reaches its apex so I can make that difference in money, that profit, right? Mm. The fear part is when people are like, oh, this is not going well. Let me sell before it gets so low that I lose so much from my initial position that maybe 70% of my earnings are gone, or what should have been earnings is gone, wiped out, right? So that's a fear and greed index. Mm. And this is how many of what we call cycles in stocks, in cryptocurrencies, virtual assets, whatever. This is how it works, is those that believe have a greed index. So they're like, we should buy more because it's going to be great. And those that don't, or somehow are like fearful, they're like, oh, I should sell this before it becomes a problem. Now, what happened was, when people saw Trump, and again, this is my opinion because nobody really knows, right?
But not even Forbes and Wall Street Journal.
Nobody can really tell you for certain. But what they can do is extrapolate information.
Yeah.
What has happened since Trump became president and decided to tell the SEC in America, wait, you can't just make all cryptos be illegal and what? I'm releasing my own coin, and all of these things that happened around it brought a whole lot of new investors in.
Mm.
But these new investors didn't look at the market and say, hey, do I know why the virtual assets industry has come to be? What is Bitcoin? How does it work? And why did all of these other ones come after?
Mm.
No, they were just like, hey, Trump said it's going to be great. I'm going with Trump. He knows how to make money.
Yeah.
So they came in. So now you had a big influx of money into the market, all across, not just with Bitcoin, all across the market, right? And everything increased. But as soon as Trump says, hey, I'm going to push up tariffs, which will make things more expensive. Remember, people were looking for a haven. Now the new entries are like, oh, this is not a safe haven. I need to get out immediately.
Yeah.
Which goes to the fear and greed index conversation, right? Yeah. So now the people that have pushed in the last year, right, more money in than has been pushed in slowly for the last 3 years are now jumping out almost immediately, which is crashing markets. But here's the thing. A lot of them are not in Bitcoin. If you look at how the greater, and again, I'm going to use this colloquial term, crypto market crashed compared to how Bitcoin crashed.
Mm.
Bitcoin didn't even go down more than 10%.
Yeah.
The rest, 80% losses, right? Which also starts to show you, if you're trying to look at a store of value, its volatility movements cannot be dependent on something else's volatility movements. Meaning, if Bitcoin jumps 10%, why does your crypto jump 80%?
Mm.
It's a following tail on what Bitcoin is doing as a stable, long-term, proven asset, right? So now you bring up the new asset to say, hey, we want Mercedes-Benz and Jetour. Like, hey, blah, Jetour is cheap. And, but you don't know if it can last you 15 years or 10 years yet.
Mm.
The other one has proven it. So now it's a thing of, do you want to gamble or do you want to be secure?
Mm.
Now, with what happened, with that in context, with what happened 2 weeks ago, a lot of people, as I said, that new entry money, they weren't in Bitcoin or the, you know, coins that have been out, not even a stable coin.
Yeah.
They were in things that were called beer coin and what coin. And
oh, so they were in this, it's not even the altcoins.
But they're all altcoins.
Yeah,
they're all alternative to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But meme coins and altcoins that might have only started yesterday or 3 years ago, but never shown you. What is this thing actually trying to do besides being a gambling stock?
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of these things are. They are tokens in internationally unregulated gambling house now.
Yeah.
Right? Because they can be.
Mm.
And Trump showed it could. So now, the question most people should be asking, when that crash happened, how many of Trump's friends made money?
Mm.
Because they knew that the crash was coming.
Mm.
Or anybody else could see the signs to say, hey, maybe we should short these coins.
Yeah.
And a lot of people made a lot of money. Mm. Even though a lot of people lost, there were so many that made money because they saw it the other way around.
Mm.
And that is why you need to look at this within context.
Mm.
What does that fear greed index actually respond to? It's news. It's who is the president that's able to make other presidents shake right now? If you say something, then we have to move.
Yeah.
So then you need to start looking at why the markets move. It's not how, but why.
Why?
And that why is who is able to manipulate with certain of these things and not with others of these. So Bitcoin can't be manipulated because of its decentralization and everything, but all of these other tokens have a CEO, a board of directors, and they can be correct. So they can be manipulated, they can be pushed, they can be spoken to.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what people need to start looking at in this industry, is what are we actually doing? And why are we doing it?
Now, the it's a good thing that you actually mentioned the variations of these particular virtual assets, because in great length you hear the altcoins, the stable coins, and then you've got the actual, the mainstays, which is the Ethereum guy and the Bitcoin guy itself. I think there's a third one. Who's the third one?
There's only Bitcoin. All of the owners of all these tokens sell these tokens for Bitcoin. So I don't
seriously
know. Well, let's think about it. If you look back literally 2 weeks ago, the creator of Litecoin, which was from the beginning, Litecoin I think was created in 2011, 2013.
Yeah.
It was one of the first altcoins. And he said, quote unquote, I should have just bought more Bitcoin and throwing money into creating Litecoin. It makes no sense. We should, every cryptocurrency, quote unquote, virtual asset owner has sold their own token for Bitcoin. Every single one. So why would you buy it?
So technically the exchange is based upon Bitcoin.
You're helping them buy their Bitcoin.
True. And then obviously there's the halvings that take place.
Yeah. But again, the whole thing that we're saying here is by buying all of these other tokens or cryptocurrencies or virtual assets, whatever you want to call them, the people that created them are buying Bitcoin with your money. Why are you buying theirs? Why aren't you just buying Bitcoin?
Because
that's what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And right? Obviously then the price goes up, which currently stands at 112.
112. Yeah. Well, sorry. This morning it hit 112 again.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it goes down.
You really want it to go down?
If we can get hit like 80,000 again before I get my next Bitcoin payment, we're good. Because again, I always tell people, earn Bitcoin. You don't have to buy it. You can earn it.
Yeah. Now, I want then to move on to the particular discussion, obviously, of from the volatility, the discussion that cites, okay, so if we see that governments are now still trying to do their CBDC discussion, the U.S. has one, but it's still a stable coin. It's technically a stable coin. What's its name? The U.S.
USDT. They actually have more than one.
Yeah, it's like two or three.
USDT, USDC. There's a couple.
Yeah.
I'd say all stable coins are CBDCs.
Technically,
right? Because what is a stable coin? It's tied to
the real world.
Fiat. Well, real is a funny term to use when people can print it out of thin air, but and not have to tie it to anything. But if you look at fiat currency, aka government issued money, mandated money, where government says this is what you must use as money. In Namibia, that's the Namibian dollar. In South African rand. In South Africa, it's only South African rand. You can't legally spend US dollars in either of these countries because it's not legal tender. You can't pay your taxes with it. No shop has to take it if you try to spend it. It's not legal tender. Now if we look at people creating a central bank digital currency, a virtualization of their national currency, what is that tied to? Remember, the Namibian dollar is pegged to the South African rand. So if they make a
CBDC,
USDSA,
yeah,
and we make a USD NEM,
yeah,
what happens with the South African actual rand will impact both their digital and ours.
Yeah.
So what's the point of making it? The whole thing here is it's control. Like if you look at what happened in China, it all started with digital IDs.
Yeah.
Which everybody is now in Namibia. Yeah, you know, it's going to make getting money easier from the government. No, that's not the point of digital IDs. The point of digital IDs is China has shown it. If you say something against the ruling party we don't like, we switch off your money. No, not that you can't earn it. You can't spend it.
And you can't access services.
No. Like, you want to go to the service that you got a million in your account, but you cannot actually spend it. It says do not honor. Not that you don't have money. You can earn your money next week again. You still can't spend it. We get to switch that off because this is programmable money now. And it's ours. Why would anybody say yes to this? Just because, oh, we're going to have a digital national. You don't need a digital national currency. And then let's go again. The whole point of Bitcoin being created was to take away the power of how America weaponizes its dollar against every other country in this world. Yet people want to use the virtual dollar. It makes no sense.
which can once again be controlled.
And now even further than it could be controlled before. Because now they can switch off the money over an entire country and say, hey, USDT can't be used in Venezuela. USDT can't be used in Namibia. In South Africa because of South Africa's whatever political standing against Israel. Whatever you want to use as a tool now,
yeah.
You can. Because internationally, people are using a USDT. Now, with the US dollar, it's already there. You can't determine what's going to happen with the US dollar once it's that side. Hence, bearer asset. Now you are taking away the ability to have a bearer asset by saying, hey, even though you have it in your wallet, I can still tell you what to do with it.
Yeah. So specifically, when we look at the origins, the true spirit of what the virtual assets were supposed to be, Nikolai, the aim was supposed to be something like when the Americans had gold before the Great Depression. When they were told, obviously, by, what's that one U.S. president?
Nixon.
Not Nixon. Roosevelt, before the Second World War.
Oh, when he said nobody was allowed to own gold anymore.
At home, yeah.
Yeah. Nixon just took him off.
We currently seeing a particular situation like that where, unfortunately, you've got governments, central governments, and central banks realizing, hey, listen, there's potentially more money out there. But we need to access it in various ways. We need to unlock it. We need to entice, and we need to do these things.
You have to understand, central banks have a singular mandate. They can print as much money as they want. They can push it. Explain to me. Okay, here we go. And this is going to be, I'm not going to be light for this comment. let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got the official rest in peace Hage Geingob $60 note.
Yeah.
We got the $30 note before that that had all three presidents on it because we had three presidents.
Yeah, it's a commemorative one.
Correct. Now we just, and then in between the $60 and $30 note, we had a reprint of the $100 note that the governor of the central bank, Gavakap, had to sign, right? And then after the printing of the new notes, after the $60 Hage Geingob note, we had another time Gavakap had to sign the new notes. And now we have a whole set of new notes and coins that just came in. Can you tell me at any point where they told us how they were going to take in the old money to offset this new money so they're not devaluing the purchasing power of what's in your pocket right now? Because again, if everybody only has $100 and that is the purchasing power of everybody, and I immediately throw in $1 million, everybody's $100 is now with $70 worth of purchasing power. It's because there's more in the system. Now, we currently are at a system where there's so much more in the system, but nobody's talking about the purchasing power of your old Namibian dollar versus your new Namibian dollar and when that will be leveled out and how. Because as you know, you still haven't in over a year been able to deposit that 30 Namibian dollar note into an ATM. The $60 notes aren't able to.
The vending machines don't read it as well.
So what we are saying now, I'm not even talking about the brand new notes. I'm talking about the $30 notes before Hage passed. Are still not able to be deposited in ATMs. So how is it getting back into recirculation? What we are doing effectively is we're allowing, and Namibia is one of the weirdest places because we celebrate every time we get a new note. But we're not understanding this is a devaluing of our purchasing power. It's not that things are becoming more expensive. Your $10 or your $100 is now less able to buy four items. You can only buy two.
Yeah.
Right? Bread used to be $14, is now $25. It's purchasing power change here. And that's what people aren't understanding by the way that this is being structured. So even when you talk about central bank digital currencies, this is now not even a physical. Now I can just press button and everybody's money is more devalued.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything about it. Like literally, I want people to look at China before they say yes to any of these things. Because this is what's happened there. Started with digital IDs. Then it moved on to central bank digital currencies. Then it moved on to credit scores. Oh, sorry, started with credit scores actually. So now it's a thing of if you have a credit score that's so low, I call you, my credit score goes down, I can't buy bread. Because my it's all tied to my digital ID. Why would you want this? That's what I think we need to start asking each other.
Yeah. It's obviously also going to be the proliferation, you know, the mass proliferation of all these digital technologies.
Yeah, and then if you don't take the vaccine, we don't let you eat. No, this is literally, guys, it's what Orwell wrote about in 1984. It's complete control. Not something that you can opt out of at that point in time.
Now, when we obviously look at these particular things, you know, obviously happening, and much of it has to do with technological rollouts. Obviously, in Namibia's case, I'd say we're pretty slow in certain particular developments, you know, in rolling out certain things. We still have to know. Remember the last time you and I spoke about the CBDC exploration?
Yeah.
Which was technically 2 years back. that exploration was one based upon whether or not the central bank wants to engage in this.
Correct.
when we have to look at CBDCs, 2 years back when we spoke, it seemed like the EU was going to jump out. China has still just explored it. China is still not yet saying we're rolling it out fully. The other countries are now saying, okay, rather let's for now allow stable coins to opt to, you know, participate in this discussion. When we look at the realm of CBDCs for central banks to step into this, like you highlighted a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the mass printing of money, mm-hmm. CBDCs in some other time frame probably would come about. Because, you know, mass adoption of technology would obviously allow for that. Mm. Would it make the actual ownership of any kind of asset, whether it be real world, let's say an actual gold thing or an actual diamond? I still have my own particular views about diamonds in Namibia, because you and I, we can't own the diamond.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah. You can't even accidentally stumble upon one because you have to ignore
it's
it.
Illegal.
Yeah, you have to ignore it even though
it's reported.
Because it broke your toe, but you can only go to the hospital without that diamond.
Correct.
Even. So when you look at the actual ownership of real world assets and all these particular things, obviously digitalization speaks towards, you know, this mass adoption of these technologies. Is it going to be something quick or is it going to be something like a gradual process? Obviously, there'll be stakeholders, lobbyists, what do they call those other things? Interest groups?
Yeah. Look, so let's start here. Firstly, stable coins is the proliferation of CBDCs. Instead of people having to fight against CBDCs, they're like, hey, let's create a stable coin. That's literally what they're doing.
Mm.
They're saying, people didn't like the CBDC idea. Let's rebrand.
Yeah.
We're now calling them stable coins and it's going to sound better. It's going to make our people feel stable, whatever it is. Like that is, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. It's essential, because again, governments will be the ones to control it.
Yeah.
They'll same way everybody thought MTC was no government in interaction. And then we all found out how many shares were on. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's, you don't know till you know. So again, why take the risk? So that's the first thing. So as we go along the ownership of real world assets, what does that even mean?
Mm.
Right? Let's look at countries let's look at Lebanon.
Mm.
Right? People going into their banks saying, hey, I need my money, being told you can't get it.
Oh, the bank runs. To avoid bank runs. Yeah.
No, forget. Avoid. They didn't have the money to pay everybody out.
Yeah.
But it's your money. It's apparently your money.
But so what is ownership? On the screen it says,
what is ownership?
Yeah.
So now you say, okay, I own gold. And then the president decides to do a Reagan and be like, but if we find you with gold, you are now the worst criminal we have in this country because you've gone against all of our. Do you understand that owning land, even property, it can be taken from you from government?
Mm.
So you don't own.
Mm.
You rent with the thought of ownership.
Or a placeholder. You're a placeholder.
So what do you, unless you control the entirety of the thing that you own, cannot be a bearer asset, which means you don't really own it.
Mm.
Bitcoin was the first thing that became that.
Mm.
Cash, actually, was the first thing. Because with cash, it's in your pocket, you can pay. Gold, hey, I got to find out if it's real gold, I got to say it, and that's why they did the whole, look at the coin, the note in the light, you can see most.
Yeah.
Right? That's self-verification. With gold, you need a qualified technician to come in and tell you if it's real gold, how much the percentage is, and you got to pay them.
Mm.
So you can't use that as money.
Mm.
You can use it as an asset, but you can't use it as money because you'd have to pay somebody so that you can pay somebody. Mm. You get me?
And then obviously it makes things highly valuable because...
It does, but it also makes things in the way that... How do you move gold? If I want to change countries because right now there's a war, and these people say you ain't moving nothing, I can't move anything.
Mm. And it's a pretty heavy metal.
Again, so I don't actually have full control over my gold. As you said, with diamonds, you can't, in Namibia, physically own the diamonds and hold them like that.
Well, except if you marry someone.
I mean, yeah.
And it's on her finger.
Well, we hope that it's a diamond. But anyway, the whole point here is you need certificates, you need everything to go through and jump through all these hoops to maybe be able to hold it. And when you want to change countries, they might say, no, you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
Now, holding a bearer asset as something that cannot be controlled, something like Bitcoin, is in that way. Because you hold your 12 or 24 words, you can. Now, when we talk about, you know, sorry, not, let me use the other word, not CBDCs, stable coins.
Mm.
Since when do stablecoin wallets give you your 12 or 24 words so you can have self-custody?
No, they don't. They don't.
So what are we talking about? You're still using a custodial service that you can be stopped from using at any point in time. Mm-hmm. Yet you want to tie this to a national currency and call it an... I just don't see it.
Mm.
I think people are trying to recreate for their own embellishment and own wealth movement to try and create something that doesn't need to be created, because you already have a true bearer asset that was created over 15 years ago.
Mm.
Nobody's been able to hack, even though they try every single day. No government. China bans it every 4 years. Why do they do it every 4 years? Because they can't ban it. So they have to keep trying to re-ban it.
Plus, there's a lot of Chinese that buy into it.
I mean, where are the miners made right now? Over 80% of Bitcoin miners globally are created in China.
Mm.
They're selling the machinery, but they're banning their citizens from utilizing the asset.
Yeah.
Like, do you see what I'm saying?
The internet is also cut off.
People are still using Bitcoin because you can't stop people from using Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, you do know you don't even need a smartphone to use Bitcoin. You can use something like Machankura that uses USSD codes. You can send it via messaging apps. You can literally use ham radios. Like, it's just a signal that you're moving. It's data.
Mm.
All right? So now you can actually have a bearer asset that you can move like cash.
Mm.
And that's why the white paper of Bitcoin says a peer-to-peer electronic cash.
Mm.
It is. He who owns it controls it.
Mm.
And this is why the proliferation of things like stable coins or CBDCs is the worst thing that we could try to go for. Rather stay with your bank then. Because giving it control of your wealth to some random guy that maybe lives in his mother's basement is not probably the greatest idea because he created a token.
And he just might make what do they call that financial thing?
A rug pull.
Yeah.
That's definitely.
He just might make a rug pull.
I mean, as soon as he reaches his number, you guys can hold the rest of his token. But again, these risks are there because people don't want to find out. They want to be either led or told by financial advisors. And most financial advisors got it wrong. They all told you not to buy Bitcoin when it was 2,000 US. Now we're at, 112?
When it was $1.
Well, they all told you the wrong thing, clearly.
Yeah.
So maybe question your financial advisors.
That was 2008.
Also question, it's not just about computer science. There's a lot of people from computer science degrees that didn't pay attention in 2012, 13, 14. They're still not paying attention. Yet, the technology has proven.
It's
So...
Yeah. Now, when we obviously look at this particular, if we can call the aspect, the existence of Bitcoin itself as a particular phenomena which speaks to positives, when you look at this particular thing, is there even an opportunity for any Namibian to try and do the same thing? Obviously, not to try and emulate what you explained later on, bringing out an alternative coin just to buy more Bitcoin here, which technically sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
It is.
Allegedly. It sounds like one. But when you look at that scenario, what's the technology?
What people call blockchain.
Blockchain, yeah. Mm. Blockchain obviously has its multiple functions for its security features. And that's one of the supposed aims that Bitcoin runs on. Blockchain has been hailed as this particular sort of like very old technology that helps secure things, but I mean.
So I'll say this. I want people to stop conflating the term blockchain with the technological advance of everything within this space.
Mm.
So here's the thing. Blockchain technology did not work before Bitcoin. Why? Like the way of linking blocks wasn't a thing because you weren't thinking about. Now we're going to get a bit more technical, but we weren't thinking about hashing the result of something to link it to something else so that it can be proven reverse-wise, right? Yeah. It wasn't thought of in that term till Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever he, she, they, whatever, how they created this thing, saw how to also make it in a sense that you wouldn't need a third party to actually validate this thing for you and make it sure. So when people say blockchain, what they actually mean is the technology that Bitcoin first invented.
Mm.
Now, if something came out with a technology and you copycat that technology off of that something, it doesn't mean that you made it better.
Yeah.
Right? What is happening right now is everybody's using blockchain as a buzzword. Oh, blockchain is the answer to everything. It's not.
Mm.
Blockchain isn't. It was the answer to how do we make sure, right, that we can timestamp transactions in a way that we can prove the transaction happened so we don't need a third party to tell us yes, or it did or didn't.
Mm.
Like, that's how the proof of work difficulty adjusted. All of that mechanism came in was to literally make it that you could solve the Byzantine general's problem, meaning you don't need a third party to say yes, it did or did not. And at the same time, not need some assayer like in gold to come through, charge you $100,000 or $1 million just to say it is on, is not Bitcoin.
And that then,
you
receive. And then your gold was just worth at $100,000.
You see, exactly, or less. Yeah. So now the entire thing here is, how do you make it that the average day person could receive like it was gold, send like it was an email, and not need anybody to say yes, you may or may not.
And then not that any commission.
That is what people are claiming is the blockchain technology. But that's what Bitcoin created.
Yeah.
Now, when you move away from Bitcoin, it's how do I change this to become my cash cow? How do I make money off of this so that you, but I can't do it with the token Bitcoin. So let me create my own one because it's open source.
Yeah.
So I can just literally copy the code and change. You know that Litecoin, the first copy of Bitcoin, literally the first altcoin. All the guy did was change the 21 million to an arbitrary number that was way higher. And everywhere where it said Bitcoin, he changed the thing to Litecoin. That's all he did.
Seriously.
That's all he did. For he the most part,
he didn't write anything.
For the first issuance of Litecoin, he didn't change, he didn't write code. He changed wording in the code that was already there.
Yeah.
And then from there,
because the code was public.
Right? It was already there and it's open source, which is not a bad thing. That's why you put out open source code. So that if anything goes wrong, other people can develop on upon it.
Yeah.
But the whole point here is, if Bitcoin was released as a closed source software, there would be no Ethereum, there would be none of these things. Yeah. None of those people
and it would
created
be more valuable actually.
They copied and innovated on the copy. That's it. So I want people to understand that blockchain technology is a buzzword. Because it's used to say, hey, this is, we have blockchain technology. So you go, like how every company now apparently has AI. Bruh, do you even understand what AI is? Like, what are you integrating? Like, what's going on?
Is it
like,
just the executives basically throwing it into Gemini?
We need AI and blockchain.
Yeah. They're just throwing it into Gemini saying, hey, listen, we've got AI.
Put it in my whole, proposal. I want AI said 15
and
times.
And then they've got like 20 guys in the IT department.
But the thing is, do the people understand what is the implementation? What is it actually supposed to do?
Yeah.
How does this make your business offering better for the people that need the solution?
Yeah.
That doesn't... Nobody,
or does it just increase your electricity bill?
Hey, or maybe you want to fire three people. Like, bro, like, what is it that we're doing here?
Yeah.
And that's where I want people to really focus on. Is it just people using buzzwords? Mm. Or is the actual technology around it? I mean, I've read a lot of white papers with, this is what we plan to do in the future. Mm. None of them did it.
Mm.
None of them.
Mm.
Like, Ethereum was supposed to literally be the global computer.
Mm.
It's still not that. Yet people are still throwing money in, staking money, whatever, but it hasn't proven its use case. But Bitcoin has.
But in that
others
white paper,
have.
In that white paper, why would they
Ethereum
say
Ethereum's one changes so much.
No, but the one that you read where they stated they wanted to be the world's computer. Like, what was that based upon?
No, so like, again, it was, so the guy that created Ethereum,
I think he's a Russian, right?
No, amen.
An American, right?
Vitalik Buterin.
Yeah.
Right? Vitalik was a Bitcoiner. He used to love Bitcoin. And then he was like, yo, I'm going to create him, Charles Hopkins. I can't remember the third or fourth guy. Mm. So Charles Hopkins is the creator of Cardano, the creator of Ethereum. All of them worked together on Bitcoin. Then all of them worked on Ethereum together and then had a split. Right. And then people started moving to, this is how you build a better blockchain. This is how you. So, but all of them made money. Guess what? All of them buy Bitcoin with their earnings.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, they still trade Bitcoin.
So what you need to understand is when Ethereum came out, it was like, I think the story goes that Vitalik was blocked from moving a game skin, like in a game, like a character had, let's call it a jersey, and he wanted to move it to another character, and he wasn't allowed to, and he was like, no, this should be possible, and because Bitcoin exists, there's a decentralized way to make this, and we're going to create Ethereum that will allow this to happen, like you can own things in different worlds, type of a thing.
Yeah.
And then it was supposed to become like the global... virtual machine, almost type of. That's a very weird term. That they use.
Save the date for November 26, 2025, when all registered voters head to the polls for the regional councils and local authorities elections. Your voice matters, and your vote is your voice. Head to your nearest polling station and elect your leaders. Remember, every vote counts. Get involved. Put your voice in the box. Vote on November 26, 2025.
virtual machine almost type of, that's a very weird term that they use, which would let everybody almost use the same computing power to execute what they need without having to run it themselves. Almost.
So that idea even sounds better than the AI idea itself.
Well, ideas sound good. What's the execution? My whole thing here is when people ask me, Nico, why are you Bitcoin only? Execution. Mm. You can see 15 years of execution. You can see what's built on it. You can see how it's helped people in authoritarian governments. You can see. It's all proof of work, my bro.
Don't give people ideas.
No, this is how it's been used. I'm in Human Rights Foundation conversations a lot. And like, they literally, people in Venezuela, people in China, people that have been banned, literally kicked out of their countries. Mm. How did they survive? It's all for Bitcoin. Mm. Now, none of them were saying, yeah, I'm going to use Ethereum or Solana or what. Why? Because who is taking the trade?
Mm.
Not a trade as in, yeah, we are inside Binance and trading. I'm saying, I want bread.
Mm.
I need you to take this BNB token. Who's taking it knowing they can sell it on? They're not, because they know they can sell Bitcoin on. Mm. The rest of it, maybe I can, maybe I can't.
Yeah.
Right? That's why people are trying to talk about stable coins. Or what, but like, again, controlled by somebody.
Mm.
So the whole thing is, do you want freedom? Do you want slavery?
Mm.
Do you want to be able to earn in a way that even though everybody that's sitting around you cannot earn and your bank account doesn't work, you can still feed your family, or don't you? Like, these are the questions that are answered by some things and not answered by others.
Yeah.
And it's very simple to see which is which.
100%. On that note, Nikolai, you know, we actually did pretty well in our discussion, you know. but I just wanted to end off in this particular, last particular talk. If we see the adoption of these particular various kind of virtual assets, would it be possible? And the second thing is obviously also, if we look at the noise around the ownership. I say noise because you sometimes would obviously have a government official saying, no, don't back that thing. And then you've got instances like what Donald Trump did. Is the influence of political decision making a real world threat to the ownership of virtual assets, for that matter, and in a Namibian context also?
Great question. Again, I like your questions today. I will say this, and I'm going to use the colloquial crypto term, so that people understand what I'm saying. It is not so much a problem for people that own and hold Bitcoin in self-custody. Not on an exchange.
Mm.
In literally, you have the 12 or 24 word backup phrase that allows you to be able to even break your phone or your computer, go to another country, grab one, throw this info in there, and still have access to your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's not a problem for them. It is a problem for the greater crypto sphere. And why is that a problem? Because they have board of directors.
Mm.
They have CEOs, they have founders that are, because we are human beings, they are subject to what is said internationally trade-wise.
Mm.
So now they also have their own fear and greed index as the people that are controlling these virtual assets. And we're leaving Bitcoin out of this, right? Because nobody controls that. It's besides the person that owns and holds it.
And the Americans tried, eh?
No, they have. They've been trying forever. The Chinese have tried. Russians have tried.
Mm.
I mean, when Putin goes on camera and says, nobody can control Bitcoin, not even me, maybe you should listen to him, right? Because it's Putin, right? And everybody tried. But what they can control is the rest of the market.
Yeah.
The rest of the market where you're trying to find that second Bitcoin. The rest of the market where you're trying to see, oh, I'm the smartest person in the room. The truth of the matter is, as long as somebody will take Namibian dollars for Bitcoin, you have an opportunity to actually opt in and buy your Bitcoin.
Mm.
When that day ends, that's a different conversation. But when they don't want to take Namibian dollars, they also won't be taking South African rand. Mm. They won't be taking
US dollar.
No, none of those currencies will be accepted anymore.
Yeah.
People will tell you, you have to give me an asset for an asset.
Mm.
I don't take what other people can print.
So then it becomes a bartering system.
We could call it a bartering system, but more a different, never be seen. I think that's when we actually get what's called a free market. We've never seen a free market, real free market in the history of the world.
Yeah.
I think this is where it comes from.
100%. On that note, Nikolai, I'd like to thank you for taking the time. And obviously it's always a good thing to talk to you, even though it takes 2 years, but thank you once again for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me, Dwight. And, for everybody for listening, Namibia, thank you very much. Have a great day.
We come back from that insightful engagement there, dear listeners. And obviously it leaves us with the last particular 10 minutes on this morning's session of, the early morning scoop.
Obviously, just as we, well, we're not going to sort of like, have enough time to get in most of the particular articles coming out from the Villager this morning. And specifically also taking a look at some of the particular talking points that obviously stem in around from from the engagement that you just heard now. So just in a short nutshell, we'll quickly take a short break, come back, and we head into the last 10-minute section, segment of this morning's engagement.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Coming back, dear listeners, there from the quick break. And yes, it was a, it was a pretty quick break in its own right. If you're just heading to, or you're stepping into your, well, your job right now, your office right now, you're tuned in to us, you're also having a listening to us, I do hope that you've got a coffee, that you've actually beaten me to a coffee at least. And that you also primarily, you've got your, your favorite diet of daily engagements that come here from Eagle FM tuned on or switched on in that regard. Now, leading off obviously just on the particular conversation that I just had with, Nicolai Chongarero, who comes from EasySats itself, based upon the notions in terms of the developments, how political messaging specifically from world leaders can influence the particular markets, of the virtual assets, and also throw a major cat in between the proverbial or into the proverbial chicken coop for that matter, which just causes a whole bunch of chaos. But we obviously have seen various particular weird things come about with not much answers or information being provided on the notion in terms of, what actually went down. Well, yes, dear listeners, just the small introduction that I gave before the engagement was that all of it started from a Truth Social post from the US President Donald Trump. Remember that the social media platform known as Truth Social is owned by Donald Trump or by his subsidiaries, his various family businesses that he has created. One of the particular developments obviously that stemmed from that discussion was that when people were trying to make a purchase with crypto, in many cases they will send the funds via their wallets. And in many cases, like what Nicolai explained just now, much of these particular developments of much of these particular alternative coins or alternative cryptocurrencies in their own right are used for means of putting money or buying or using money that was accumulated through the through people purchasing into other cryptocurrencies in order to buy the Big Daddy itself, that was the original cryptocurrency itself, Bitcoin. Now, the recent developments have obviously seen that Bitcoin has reached the heady heights a few months back in terms of 120 to $130,000, and that has obviously seen many people saw, wow, this thing really looks nice and valuable in that own particular right. And then obviously the mayhem and chaos of 2 weeks back that has created potentially, one of the oddest things in human financial history. So, on that particular notion, the concerns that obviously stem is that, for example, Transparency International, from the UK perspective of things, have cited that the UK government's 2025 National Risk Assessment identified crypto assets as a growing risk to both money laundering and terrorist financing due to the anonymity, the speed, and the global reach of transactions, speaking to the control mechanisms obviously being cited by the conversation with Nicolai just now. And obviously, it also factors in that both the United States and the UK have banned transactions with networks that use this technology to evade sanctions on Russia. The UK law enforcement has also linked high cryptocurrencies to highly sophisticated cross-border money laundering for organized criminal gangs and Russian elites, who are, you know, which is a system primarily which can be viewed as a shadow banking system in its own right. Hence the reason the control aspect being flagged in this discussion. So we obviously see this particular development in the right, in the aspect of cryptocurrencies, you know, looking problematic. It is similar to the same things that Namibia has been trying to sort out with regards to our grey listing. Or the grey listing is sort of like you are sitting in the cold corner for now up until you sort out any particular issues that is associated to your country's financial legislation, laws, mechanisms, banking sector, with the anti-money laundering and anti-terror financing mechanisms that were brought forward by various countries around the world. And it's primarily one of those things that Namibia has been trying to sort out in their own right. We're about 4 minutes out from the top of the hour. Getting you back to just quickly taking a look at some of the foreign exchange indicators in terms of what your Namibian dollar can afford, specifically if you're going to fly or travel outside of Namibia, or if you're a traveler coming into Namibia and you'd like to know what the particular going rate is for the various top three currencies in the world. For 1 euro, you'll be able to get 20 Namibian dollars and 66 cents. For 1 British pound sterling, it would be at 23 Namibian dollars and 46 cents. For 1 US dollar, it'll be at 17 Namibian dollars and 86 cents. Just before we technically have to hand over to my colleague, Mike, who just signaled to me that he's technically just waiting on me to finish up. Just to highlight to you, dear listeners, that specifically in this morning's e-paper edition, that you can look forward to interesting reads specifically based upon the potential avenue of seeking to bolster Namibian legislation to prosecute people or prosecute persons and entities that are found guilty of financial crimes in order to achieve Namibia's de-grey listing from the Financial Action Task Force. A second scenario would be that of the discussion based upon cheaper credit that is not enough to stimulate the property sector in the country. This obviously speaks towards the accessibility component. A little bit earlier, I gave you the slight introduction and overview in terms of how a country like the United States is trying to clean up its own particular support mechanism for affordable housing, specifically based in the component that it's through rental agreements. But affordable rental agreements and assistance being provided to single parents, predominantly single mothers, and families and households specifically from disadvantaged positions in the broader American society. I say positions, not just communities. The other particular talking point that stems from our engagement is obviously the very insightful engagement, or sort of like the contribution that Chinese ambassador to Namibia, Chao Wei-ping, cited in a recent media engagement with the Chinese embassy regarding the position that, that China supports African and Latin American countries in terms of their reparations or their call for reparations, which in its right is just a clear-cut, obvious, particular position. And I see the phone line flashing. I'm really sorry, dear, for the caller calling in right now. But it actually does bring us up to the end for this morning's engagement. Do stay tuned for the rest of your programming and specifically my colleague Mike to follow on after the break. We can catch each other later on today on the home run. I'll have time for callers' contributions also there. I'm really sorry, guys. I usually pack the early morning scoop pretty full. I do apologize to the caller coming through, but we can engage a little bit later also on if you'd like to keep that question for later on. I'll try and engage upon it if it falls within the ambit of the particular content for this afternoon's session. On that note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your session and your programming in our company. This is a Friday. Please, guys, as our one and only Eagle FM's Captain Divundu, that being Helmut, always says, you know, ensure that your salary and a weekend do not meet or cross. or engage in just being in close proximity to each other on a Friday. On that note, enjoy the rest of your programming of this Friday morning. Let's see each other again a little bit later.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
station. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukulile Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo Ihewekike kovano ile koshuwana Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Nuneudo otukwetira o special Geta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushenjife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM Onore satimwe bali heali Nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kongerewa Nora hetatu natu Bali o hetatu batatu Oma filane Eagle FM The Eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukulile Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo Ihewekike kovano ile koshuwana Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa Nuneudo otukwetira o special Geta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushenjife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM Onora esatimwe bali heali Nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kongerewa Nora hetatu natu Bali o hetatu batatu Oma filane Eagle FM The Eye
We continue, dear listeners, a slight little technical difficulty here, but in terms of just where we left off with the particular talking points coming through, obviously, from this morning's Villager e-paper, do remember that if you've not become a subscriber as yet, it's pretty straightforward stuff. You can find it on our social media as well. And you can also, if you are a follower of us on our WhatsApp channels for both the Villager and for Eagle FM, These particular, you know, talking points are encapsulated in the particular e-papers that we bring out on every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday. It's pretty straightforward. Just drop us a text message on WhatsApp that says subscribe at 081-241-44. Straightforward. It doesn't cost you much. Obviously, you just need to have data and you can get the particular updates going. Some of the last talking point I just left off before the goodbyes, and let me actually get this caller's contribution coming through. Eagle FM, good morning.
Hey, Dwight.
Angabona, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Morning, how are you?
I'm all right.
I've been listening from the time when you began.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe you were going to finish the conversation with the expert there.
Mm.
But then it appeared it went on until almost the last time, the last minute. But nevertheless, I thought you were even gone. But the issue we are talking about, the more particularly single mothers. What about more particularly single father?
In terms of the, where are we now, Uncle Bona? You'll have to help me here.
In terms of,
the housing.
Yes, because you mentioned about those things.
Yeah.
So yes, particularly the single mother, they need some attention, they need care, they need to be taken in terms of housing. What about the single father who are also left with the children that are there or the people who are there, the descendants, or whatever you call them, all those people. What about the single father? And this is where we neglect a boy child.
Mm.
We think, we assume that the single fathers are sufficient on themselves.
Mm.
They don't need help. They don't need social welfare. They don't need some kind of comfort or counseling. They must just deal with their own issue, problems, economic issue and social issues, the housing that you are talking about. Why can't we just do the same thing, man? We do the equitable kind of a thing.
Mm.
We balance up the whole things, balance of probability. Why can't we do that?
The interesting thing is obviously, if you look at that system, that affordable housing program that the United States has, which obviously came under scrutiny this year because they're trying to now push people off the system, which have been there for more than 5 years. And the whole idea behind that affordable housing scheme was literally to help you with achieving affordable housing. You pay 50% of the rent agreement and then the government subsidizes the other 50%. Was that it ensures that people are not destitute. They don't find themselves on the street. They are not poor. They're not unhoused, you know.
We do it. I thought maybe that strategy or idea can be replicated here.
It can be.
This is what we do.
It can be. But the point that you were asking about, Angabona, was, you know, how to help single parents, specifically if it's a single man parent who has his children, obviously his dependents with him. The weird thing is, Angabona, is that I'm probably going to start some sort of a gender war with a statement, but in many cases it is there to help single mothers predominantly.
Predominantly single father.
Even in a country like the United States, no one can answer that question. But all the people that are like family psychologists will tell you that mothers are the automatic guardians of.
It's a lie of the devil. It's a lie, and this is what is causing more social problems here. Gender-based violence, violence in general, crimes and all these things, they are all linked to these things. It's because of the inclusion of some gender thing there.
It is also a very strong message that, for example, the UN also transmits. The Ministry of Labor is going to host a particular engagement next week. Ministry of Labor and Justice, sorry, it's now two platforms. An engagement based upon, social justice. That's the new thing that they're achieving.
Social justice, yeah. Yes.
And
we have been talking about social justice from the time immemorial.
Exactly.
And in many cases, you would see in that, you know, they have to try and promote the gender balance, the gender equality subject matter, because even I was in a corner of saying, but I see so many men that are also unemployed and the likes, but the downside has been, Angabona, when economic difficulties come, the first people that are always retrenched and fired are women, and which is a very, very ugly reality I've also had to accept.
That one, we must address them with specific focus.
Yeah.
And because they are, of course, I am recognizing the differentiation, you know, of this thing. But once you come to, you know, these people are treated differently because they have different needs, they have different strategic needs, and all these other needs. But what we are saying is that if we are able to form up a really partnership and to make sure that we match these people, whether they are girls, whether they are boys, in terms of their programming, that will really benefit and address their issue, let's not leave them out. Of course, we understand that they perhaps excluded and things like that. And in the past, they were also regarded as the only immediate custodians of the children.
Yeah.
But that's not has been. It's just because
they're,
sometimes
and they're still viewed
the
like that.
Benefit.
And they're still viewed like that. Angabona, we have to hand over now to
Mike. My brother, so next time I love the way when you are here, man. So.
Okay, Angabona. Okay, let's chat a little bit later, Angabona. See you later.
Cool. All the best, man.
Yeah. And on that note, dear listeners, we hand over to my colleague Mike, who's we've sorted out the slight technical issue. We'll be crossing over to him in a short GIF.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and
any of its staff.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.